I got slightly delayed there because somebody pinged me a message on Discord just as I was trying to turn down the sound. I'm sorry. Welcome back to the Stiff Upper Lip podcast, everybody. We finally managed to sit down on our allotted recording day, on allotted recording time. And not only did we manage to get ahead of the curve, but we've also got a full slate of people here with me right now. Ed, Sam, Max, welcome all three of you for the first time this season. How the dickens are all three of you doing? Collectively or individually?
We're fine.
Yeah, Max speaks for all of us.
Yeah. We had a brief conference at the start, and we've decided that I'll be the spokesperson for our well-being. We're doing fine, other than Ed's internet, which is on the ropes.
Yeah, it sort of. We were doing a bunch of testing just before this, and it was like, okay, Ed seems to have like sorted out the delay, and then just randomly in the middle of that, like 5 seconds after asking, jumped right back in. It's all right. I'm sure that nothing bad could ever possibly come of having one of the people on a substantial delay. Had a full week of NFL games, everybody. That was fun. Wasn't that exciting? Whole bunch of games that got very close and very exciting.
Maybe it was exciting. We found it to be exciting. We did. However, I will say, you say we had a
full really good, slate. Thank you, Tom.
You say you had a full slate.
No, that was
slate.
A joke. Hopefully.
We haven't actually had the full slate yet, because we're recording on the Monday.
Shut up.
Ah, this is true.
They don't know this. What an exciting game played by the Saints and the Panthers, right?
Yeah, it didn't make me want to stop being a fan of football at all.
yeah, good times. We maybe in seasons past would have talked about the whole bunch, but as part of our new plan, we have a little segment coming up later on where we're going to go through the over-under win percentages from the preseason odds from MGM, because Max went and looked at those, did some little research, and we're going to go pick out and have a little discussion about quite a few of those teams, see whether or not we agree after a couple of weeks of the season, or whether or not they have been vastly overstated, like I'm sure we definitely know one of those teams, and Max definitely was aware because he wrote on the spreadsheet next to their win total, put like 5 exclamation marks and then put lol afterwards. and I agree, but we'll come on to that in a bit. But we might as well get started with a pair of games that we can really sort of break down. And we're going to start with the Seattle Seahawks getting the win against the Detroit Lions, 37-31. And this was a game for the ages. And it also gave us this glorious moment, which is just fantastic. We'll be carrying that forward. But yeah, Seahawks end the Lions' very short-lived, unbeaten run to the start of the season. And got themselves a nice little 37-31 win as well in overtime. Geno Smith throwing 328 yards and 2 TDs. How did everyone else feel about this game? Does anyone feel better or worse about either of these two teams? Or was it just a nice little Sunday's entertainment?
I mean, it's nice seeing the Seahawks kind of stop the, you know, very brief slide. Geno looked great, bar that really weird long sack that he took. The pass rush did something. It didn't do a lot. But was it Nwosu who forced a fumble?
I think. I believe so.
It was
I think for me, one of my main takeaways from this game is,
sorry Max.
Oh, no. That's pretty brutal. That was pretty brutal. I was gonna say, one of my main takeaways from that game is that Jared Goff and Geno Smith probably aren't that different as quarterbacks. I think if you give them both time, they'll find an open receiver, which both teams have the receivers who can get open. I think the Lions have to be a little bit concerned about the fact that they were missing Taylor Decker and they lost Vitae in the game. And Jahmyr Gibbs, not a very fruitful day on the ground, even after David Montgomery went out. So that's a big part of their identity. And if it's a serious injury, then that could be a big concern for them.
Yeah, I mean, neither team's defense really came to play in this one at all, it felt like. Alexander Loney had a fairly big play with that, like, massive, real brain error from Geno Smith as he was trying to let the clock run down, but really should have just, like, thrown it away. It was already in towards the two-minute warning. Outside of that, there just wasn't really much great play from either side until... Jared Goff ended his longest active streak in the NFL. He was what? He needed to throw like 46 passes in this game without throwing an interception, and he'd break the NFL record set by Aaron Rodgers. Got through 26 of them and then threw a pick, so forget all about that. Jared Goff does not hold the longest streak in NFL history without an interception, and we can all feel better about ourselves again.
It wasn't just a pick, though, was it? Wasn't it a pick six?
It was a pick six, which ultimately ended up being like the decisive play of the game. But
it was a bit of a backbreaker because they made it a two-score game, but they did well to come back into it. I think the Lions, or rather the Seahawks, leaned so much on Tyler Lockett. I think DK Metcalf is not... Obviously, he's a very different receiver to Tyler Lockett in many ways, but I just don't think he has the sort of savvy that Tyler Lockett has in terms of in those big situations and in long distance to go downs. If you can hold up, then you can bet that Tyler Lockett will be open. And if it's a good ball, he'll catch it. He's just like clockwork, really.
That always goes back for me to, do you remember the Ole Miss offense where it was DK and AJ Brown and they just ran goes every time?
Yeah, he's
like,
I'm
not surprised. Finesse. I'm not surprised that he's not got the most culture, yeah.
Yeah, not the most finesse receiver. But it's nice to have that 1-2 punch. And then, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how much it changed my opinion of either of these teams this game. I think the first week for the Seahawks, I thought it was probably a bit of an aberration on what they were truly going to look like. And for the Lions, I thought they were really lucky to beat a shorthanded Chiefs team. So I know a lot of people are probably getting a little bit carried away. But these two teams are probably going to be in that like 6-7 seed in the playoffs. They probably will lean on the strengths of their lines because they've both got, I don't want to be too cynical at this point in the season, but mediocrity's a quarterback?
Oh, yeah.
They don't have difference-making quarterbacks, I don't think.
I feel like that's very harsh. I feel like over the end of last season, we saw Geno play very well. We saw Goff play very well.
Weirdly, I don't think they were really good at the same time. I think Geno started the season really well, and then his powers were transferred to Goff in the second half of the season. But I don't think... Would you say that either one of them is a difference-making quarterback?
Yeah, surely they're kind of what you would expect from any, like, you know, kind of mid-tier, you know, top 12 to 20 quarterback in the league, where if they're protected, they'll make, like, you know, good decisions.
I reckon they're both... a shade or a shade and a half worse than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
I mean, you've put me in a very strange position here. I kind of think that at the moment, I'd say that I don't see any reason why either of them couldn't be in the conversation for like a top 10 QB. Like, aside from maybe that Goff pick six, which was a bit boneheaded, like, they're not doing anything wrong. And this year, so far, that's proved that that'll score you 28 points and potentially a victory if you just don't do anything wrong.
But potentially is a key part of it. I think There's a lot of QBs in this league who won't lose you the game, but they won't go out and win you the game. And I think that's where I put both of these dudes. And I don't know. I mean, we talked about it earlier in terms of neither of the defenses really come into play in this game. That Lions pass rush looked a little bit blunted compared to what they were in week one, too.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, especially with, like, the only reason to me as to why the Lions didn't record any, like, meaningful box score measurements against the Chiefs was just because of, like, the strength of Patrick Mahomes' mobility. But, like, this time around, like, Aiden Hutchinson just could not generate anything, and there just wasn't anything else going off of the other side. Like, Romeo Okwara was sort of just really ineffectual. They didn't get anything out of, like, Derek Barnes. Their secondary just felt a little flat as well, with, like, CJ Gardner-Johnson and Cameron Sutton not really playing very well. Brian Branch had a little quieter of a game. Malcolm Rodriguez just didn't even show up really at all. They definitely felt a lot more blunted as a whole unit, the Lions. But then, like, on the offensive side, like, I mean, Ben Johnson, just what an offensive coordinator. He might be scheming up, like, the most exciting offense out of a bunch of random names. Like, the whole reason why this Jared Goff renaissance has happened is because of Ben Johnson. And their playbook's exciting. And, I mean, some of the even plays that go for, like, 3 or 4 yards, like the Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, end-around play that ended up being, like, a fairly crucial first down in the red zone. Like, some of the imagination on some of these, like, makes you wonder how are so many offensive coordinators in this league unable to scheme, like, half of their guys open, and Ben Johnson and, like, every Niners offensive coordinator just seems to be able to just do it like it's nothing.
It's an interesting question. I feel like one of the things that he has going for him more than anything else is he's got an O-line that'll keep Goff upright. And I suppose when you've got that extra 2 or 3 seconds, then you can get a bit more creative. You know, it kind of reminds me of the Matt Patricia offense where, you know, all they could run is power and dragon because they didn't have any ability to pass block.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
If Goff was getting roughed up, I don't think we would be saying oh, he's doing, you know, he's got these receivers wide open, because you only really notice it when they get found. And yeah, as Ed says, when you've got the offensive line to keep him upright, then he has got that time to pick someone who's just stood by himself, you know, 5 yards from anyone else.
I mean, he is back to, like, second stringers at left tackle and right guard now. So how long they can maintain that kind of time, I'm not entirely confident about, but...
I think while we're discussing O-line play, man, if I go down a little bit of a weird road...
No, my God, we've already spent, like, 15 minutes in this game.
Sorry, do you want to move on?
No, it's all right. If you want to go down a rabbit hole, but I'm going to set the timer going, and you've got 3 minutes dead on. Go.
Do you guys remember Mitchell Schwartz?
Yes.
Like the Chiefs, yes. The Chiefs tackle.
He
was
does,
like,
not shut up on Twitter.
Yeah, he does not shut up on Twitter. But he was, like, a very, very good player, but he had a sort of very unorthodox style of O-line play. Do you remember this was sort of the thing about him, was that he didn't seem to win with power or win with technical ability, just sort of seemed to win because he'd stayed in the play longer. And I feel like every Seahawks O-lineman looks like that. None of them seem to be that good, but they also don't allow pressure. Like, when you watch it, it's so messy, but also seems to work.
Yeah, they definitely... I feel like with the Seahawks as well, they seem a lot more banged up than they did last season when it comes to the O-line. Like, I seem to remember them just not having, like, any major injuries on the offensive line, like, at all year. So, like, you could potentially see, like, an Abraham Lucas or something starting to really settle into the NFL speed and not really making mistakes. Whereas, like, they seem a little bit more banged up, which is why it's so surprising that like Aiden Hutchinson and this Lions front just did not get after Geno like at all, because they do seem like on paper, especially, they're a little bit roughed up, and it might be one to just keep your eyes on. And same again with the Lions, like if they're missing Taylor Decker and Vitae as well going forward for like any amount of time, like it just feels like the whole strength of the team is both of them have good O-line protection, and it allows like these two Dalton-esque quarterbacks to really excel where they need to. But they might struggle going forward. Anyway, let's move on. Good job, everybody. We got through that, I feel like, fairly reasonably. We'll move on now to the game that I think we sort of all unanimously also agreed on wanting to talk about. The Tennessee Titans improved to 1-1, and they did it in overtime, beating the LA Chargers 27-24, a sort of midway through the overtime field goal by Nick Folk ends up winning the game. Justin Herbert, 305 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. Keenan Allen, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns. Somehow this Chargers team finds new and inventive ways to lose in the face of wins. They are up there for me with like the Ravens for the most snake bitten team in the whole NFL this year. Like, there is no reason for the curse to existing.
It's not snake. It's not being snake bitten. They just can't get it done. Like, if you look at a Chargers game, and you'll see them moving down the field, but they never do anything with it. They never get key stops. They never, you know, their situational football is awful, and that's not just down to luck. It's the fact that, you know, you always end up asking yourself the same questions, like, is this O-line really good enough? They're giving up sacks in key situations. The running game is, you know, week one it looked really good, week two not really a factor. And you've got Keenan Allen, who's, you know, getting old now, and Mike Williams, and you talk about them like they're elite receivers. And, on, you know, maybe on paper you'd say Keenan Allen probably is. And yet, like, when was the last really impactful play this team made? Like, when was the last time someone it got to...
Do you mean, like, outside of, like, a visually exciting play by Justin Herbert?
Like what play do you think has had the biggest effect on win probability in a Chargers game that the Chargers have made in their favour? Because it's been a while now, but I can't think of many. They just never seem to be... You know, they never seem to play complementary football. They never seem to get the rubber of the green in the right situations. And after a while, it stops being luck, and it's just like, this team's just not got the right mentality.
Do you remember when he came into the league and everyone was like, oh, Brandon Staley's going to be this sort of analytics-driven game changer?
Yeah, there must have been like some sort of piece on The Athletic about it or something, because that's never been true. He's never been anything out of the ordinary.
That was going to be exactly my point.
It's just a classic moment of like circular thought. Like, oh yeah, no, I heard Staley's going to do all this crazy stuff, and he's going to play the numbers. He's really got his fucking, you know, what do they call it? Like game theory. He's really going to turn the Chargers around. No, he's just timid. Timid at the worst times. Unremarkable defense full of underperforming stars like JC Jackson, Khalil Mack. These guys, there's no determination there. The whole team, with the fact that, you know, that no one's a supporter of the team, they never really play any proper home games. There just doesn't feel like anything's ever at stake for the Chargers. Like,
does feel like if everything about this whole team though was anywhere that had a fan base that wasn't just so apathetic and also consists of about 4,000 people total, like, I mean, obviously names aren't always important, but like, like you mentioned with the defense especially, Derwin James is, what, the second highest paid safety in the whole NFL? And, you know, multi-time All-Pro and stuff. Joey Bosa, J.C. Jackson, Asante Samuel Jr., Khalil Mack, who I know is, like, regressed hard at this point, but even still, like, it's Khalil Mack. Like, Kenneth Murray Jr. shouldn't be anywhere near this, like, bad. They're just getting pushed all over by, like, everyone. I know that they've played, like, they played probably the best passing team in the NFL, like, according to how it's looking. I don't know all the DVOA and all that, but, like, the Dolphins last week just threw all over them. But you'd think, okay, maybe they could, like, get right here against a Titans team that Ryan Tannehill isn't throwing the ball particularly great and stuff. Every time that it cut to a Titans play, it looked like Tannehill was dropping a 40-yard bomb right over the top of the whole lot of them. Like, it wasn't even like Derrick Henry was, like, running all over them in this game. He had 8 yards on 25 carries. He didn't exactly, like, do anything incredible. They kept him fairly bottled up. But it's just every single time that they needed one play to not be a 40-yard bomb right over the top into the hands of Treylon Burks or Chris Moore, whoever the hell that is. It just feels like they're just a complete, like, useless franchise when it comes to, like, trying to do the right thing at the exact right time. They get it wrong every time. And the worst part is that Justin Herbert is going to get the fucking flaming and the like bashing here. He couldn't play a better game every time. It's outrageous. It is genuinely, what? It's silly.
So much of this is on, like, the defense and, like, kind of on Brandon Staley by proxy. Like, they give up so many big plays. Like, so many, like, 30, 40-yard passing plays. Which, I mean, against Ryan Tannehill, it's embarrassing. But it's every game. It's, like, massive plays in, like, important, like, you know, in important situations, or it's like massive penalties, like in the same important situations. Like, there was a drive in the third quarter where there was the Derwin James penalty on, like, third and long, and then there was a Sebastian Joseph 2 penalty on third down, like, 2 plays later. They just get in their own way every single time.
Yeah, they're just a team that are just, like, they're just completely out of ideas, you feel like. And it, again, like, you sort of mentioned the penalties, like, it just goes back to the last week against the Dolphins. If J.C. Jackson doesn't just cause the most useless DPI of all time when it's like a ball sort of hopelessly thrown towards Tyreek in triple coverage, like, maybe they just get the win. But they just can't get out of their own way at any point. What is Brandon Staley trying to work on throughout the week? They're just, like, it's just so useless. It's such a useless endeavor trying to get any answers on this Chargers team, because ultimately they'll just go back out next week and Justin Herbert will throw for 320 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Austin Eckler will run for a fucking 114 yards and a touchdown, and they'll still manage to find a way to lose by a score. And this happens every year. It's not even like a yo-yo effect.
The Chargers operate in... They've invented a new concept, which is, like, reverse garbage time, which you would think would be, like, when it matters the most. But it's actually, like, the bit before that matters the most is the bit that they operate really well in. Like, if the game's, like, 7-3 in the first quarter, they've got the most unstoppable offense in the league. And then if it's like 24-21 in the fourth quarter, Justin Herbert's taking 4 sacks in the quarter. You know, they're having key drops. Mike Williams has been injured for 55 minutes. yeah. You know, it's honestly, it's maddening. And I don't know where the leadership is, but I don't even know what you can say about it at this point.
Well, I do know one other thing. I'll let Ed actually get a word in, but just to really sum up exactly what this Chargers team is like, this is the only ever team in NFL history that's started 0-2 despite scoring 50 plus points with 0 turnovers. They are hopeless at doing literally anything to support this very efficient offense from just being able to just win a game because they just can't get the exact right play at the exact right time. It's annoying me now because I actually really do like the Chargers, but they can't get over the line. And they're so primed at the moment to take the AFC West. It is such a dumpster fire right now. Nobody looks good in the division. And the Chargers are somehow charging their way to the worst division record. How?
How indeed.
I assume that we've sort of covered everything for you, Ed.
I suppose I think my point is a kind of look to the future. Because next week is Chargers Vikings. And they're sort of like two sides of a very similar coin in a lot of ways. And like there's a very real chance that one of these teams' seasons will be over.
Yeah.
Three. Like one of these teams is going 0-3.
So even an 0-2 team, like obviously I don't want to get, you know, too bogged down in like Statland, but they like an 0-2 team has going back to 2000, I think, like a 10% chance to make the playoffs. And since they expanded it to seven teams, was that 2020? One team has made it, and that was the Bengals last year. So it's not great already, but 0-3 seems insurmountable.
And then you add two of the most cursed teams in NFL history trying to achieve that.
Do you know, I wonder what next week's game is going to look like. Do you know the sort of the fallacy of like, oh, if you strap a bit of toast with butter on one side to the back of a cat, like it'll just spin in circles above the floor because you can't have toast land not butter side down or a cat landing on its feet, so it'll just keep spinning in a circle. That just sort of feels like the exact sort of epitome for this game.
A good way to avoid that is by just buttering toast as it's entering your mouth.
What, as in like, what, just holding a knife directly above your mouth? Above your mouth?
Well, like, as you propel it towards your mouth, be spreading butter on it.
It just seems like you're about to drop a knife with butter all over it and then have to do one more pop.
We have to do, what, 31 teams?
Shut the hell up! Right, let's move on then to our little segment here. We have a nice little list of teams here with over under records, and we're gonna go. How do you want to actually choose which ones we do? Do we go by division in the sort of order that we've got it listed here, Max? Or should we just
might
like,
as well.
Yeah,
fuck it. We're gonna take one each from within the division, and we'll have a little chat. We've got three minutes on the clock for each one.
Two. It'll take an hour and a half.
Okay. No, yeah. All right. We've got 2 minutes on the clock for everyone. You'll just have to like, I've got like a little soundbite queued up just in case like you're going too close. We might potentially have like a couple that we take a little longer with, but we'll get started with, considering that we've got two host teams right at the very top, we'll start with Max with the Packers at 1-1 with an over under pre-season of 7.5 wins. Max, take her away.
Yeah, so straight out of the gate, I'm probably gonna bang the over on 7.5. I think it's gonna be close. Packers seem like an 8 or 9 win team. 7 is not out of the question. I don't think they'll be much worse than 7. I think what my takeaway was from watching the Falcons game for the Packers is Jordan Love is not ready yet to take this team on, put it on his back. And, you know, you can say that a lot of that is down to the fact that, you know, Bakhtiari was out, Jenkins was out, Jones was out, Watson was out, and a lot of these players are playing their second or third NFL game. It is only Love's third start. But that doesn't change the fact that when it was time to go and win the game and do anything on offense in the fourth quarter, nothing happening. So that's not good. But against the Bears, they did look in control when they were on schedule, and I think they are probably going to be a mediocre team. I don't know what anyone else has to say about that, but for me, I'm going to say over just about.
Yeah, it feels like
soft division.
7.5 feels like the exact point for me. Like, they're either going to be a 7 or 8 win team.
No, I reckon 8.5 after week one it would have changed to.
No, come on now. Quiet you.
Do you know who leads the NFL in passer rating and touchdowns at the moment?
No.
Jordan Love.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not joking. But like I said, when he's on schedule, it is pretty good, so which is good enough to probably get you to that 7 wins, but then they're going to need a bit of luck for the extra couple.
All right, I feel like we managed to sneak in there. Does anyone have anything else? Or
I can see that.
Yeah, perfectly conceivable.
Cool.
You guys taking the over, the under?
I'll probably take the over.
Yeah, based on the division, I'll take the over.
Yeah, I think I'll take the over, but like I say, like an 8 win. All right. Ed, you're up with the Minnesota Vikings at 8.5 wins preseason. Take her away.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because I would probably still take the over on this one, and I don't think that's homerism to say that I would do that. And the big thing is when you look at the schedule, they still have to play most of the teams in the AFC West, which initially looked like a bit of a murderer's row, but seems less so now. I could see this team, you know, the arse hanging out of the season and they go with 4 wins, or I could see them right in the ship. But I think that one of those things will either happen. Like, I either think they'll get more than 10 wins or fewer than 6. So on that, I'm happy to go with the over on that one.
I would say same logic as what I was saying for the Packers. I reckon there's at least 3 or 4 wins in the division for the Vikings. So if you get 4, then with it being 8.5, you're already right there. And I think they'll do just enough, but it's going to be close as well. 9 and 8 does sound about right, but you never know. There could be some more freak 1-score losses down the road.
I think I'm prepared to take the... I think I'm going to say I'm going to take the under, because 8.5 for an 0-2 team at this stage, like, it feels like there are going to be some fluky losses in the way. 8.5 feels tough. Yeah.
I don't begrudge you that one little bit.
I can kind of see them scrapping out, like, I can see them scrapping out 9 wins. I'd probably take the over. It's not the worst schedule in the league, you know.
That is true. Right. We're flying.
Did we all take the over there, or did Tom? Did you take the under?
Oh, I took the over.
Oh, okay.
I've updated the sheet. I can see that you're doing that. I know Sam did as well. Oh no, I took the under. Yeah, my bad. whoops. All right, Sam. Oh boy. The Chicago Bears currently at 0-2. Preseason. Brace yourselves. 7.5 wins. Over or under, Sam?
Under, like, sub-basement levels, under. This, so that, like, it's not all absolute, like, sell the farm and burn it all down, but it's about as concerning as you could probably have, like, foreseen before the season. The game against the Packers was pretty atrocious, and they managed to kind of run up the score, you know, a bit later. 317 yards for Baker Mayfield, with admittedly some, you know, very nice receiving weapons, is a pretty... if you're giving up those kind of numbers to a quarterback like Mayfield, it's a lot to overcome over the course of a season. Like, a couple of... he managed to get away from quite a few, like, probably would-be sacks. And there was an interception that, you know, Jaquan Brisker absolutely should have had. And they kind of put together some good stuff on offense for, like, drives at a time. Like, but then especially on defense, it kind of just falls apart. Like the Bucs were like 7 of 11 or 12 on third down by the third quarter, and Chicago pulled it together a bit, but I just don't see where, like, I just don't see where this play's gonna improve to a degree.
Come on, Sam. Bang, so yeah, here.
Horrible.
Yeah. No surprise, I'm taking the under. 7.5 is just rough.
That fucking Shaq Barrett interception.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, I don't really know. Like, DJ Moore did make a big difference in that game. He's clearly a very good wide receiver, but I don't think adding DJ Moore and some off-ball linebackers and some guards who aren't very good was enough to push it from 3 wins last year to 7.5. I'm probably, I'm definitely taking the under on that. They seem like they'll be in the contention for the number one pick again.
Yeah, my new wife is in earshot, so I'm going to say this under, but I'm going to say it quietly.
Understandable. All right. On
play then. Certainly wasn't overstandable.
Good stuff. All right. Next is myself. I've been given the 1-1 Detroit Lions, who at preseason were 9-5. Now, I'm going to go with the over. And my main reasoning is that I'm looking at their schedule right here. And their next 5 games, hear me out, home to Falcons, at Packers, which I think will be a loss, but home to Panthers, at Buccaneers. That's 3-2 already. Then they also still have to play the Raiders. They have to play the Bears. They have to play the Packers at home. They have to play the Bears again. They have to play the Broncos. To me, that feels like a team that could pick up the necessary amount of wins, the 10 wins needed to get the over here. That's such a weak schedule for a team that's frisky, in my opinion. The Saints as well. I forgot they've got the Saints, who could be a little shaky. They've got, obviously, the Vikings twice, which come end of year, is that Vikings team going to still be alive and pushing? Who knows? It just feels like, I know that if they're going to be missing Taylor Decker and Vitae on the offensive line, maybe this all just completely goes out the window, but this Lions team feels like the best Lions team that I've definitely seen since I've been watching the NFL. It might be the best Lions team that has been in the NFL for the best part of fucking 40 years, it feels like. Just very frisky, that's all.
Yeah, I'm taking the over on this one, but it's probably the closest one yet to me. I think somebody has to win this division, and from what we've seen so far, I think the Lions are the most complete team. And if you're winning the division, the chances are, I mean, it's not like, remember that horrific NFC South where that you get through a losing record nearly. I don't think it's that bad. So I think if you win the division, you've probably got at least 9 wins, and I think the Lions will win the division with 10.
Ed and Zem?
Yeah, I'm taking the over.
Is it possible to bet the even here?
What, you think they're going to be 9 wins
seven and a tie?
One?
Yeah, 9-7-1. I'm going for it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to put a nice little E in your thing there. E for Ed. Okay. Right, we've wrapped back around. Thank you for getting through the NFC North very efficiently, I feel like. And now we're going to start with the New York Football Giants, 1-1. Preseason prediction, 7.5 over or under. Sam, floor is yours.
Okay, 6 quarters of the most awful, embarrassing football I have ever seen. And 60-0... tally after those 6 quarters was then followed by, I believe, a touchdown on every possession in the second half of the Cardinals game. I don't know what happened. I don't know what wasn't working prior to that, where they were getting absolutely decimated by Josh Dobbs Cardinals, but they hit some really nice long passes. The big long, like 50 or 60 yards to Jalen Hyatt. It looked like a team that could actually kind of do some things, but you cannot start a season like they did and kind of slot back into, you know, the position that most people would have pegged them for prior to the season, I think. Although a lot of people probably thought they'd regress quite a lot. They have a lot of tough fucking games coming up. It's like the next, what is it, the next four games, I think, Niners, Seahawks, and then Bills and Dolphins, which is going to be absolutely horrible. And the it does soften up, like, the back half of the year, kind of. But I'm banging the over here. But it will take a... It's just hard to forget those six quarters, you know?
That's fair. I'm taking the under. I know that they've already got one of those wins, but I'm taking the under. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was against one of I think what I you would think to. Is... Oh, I get it. It sounded like you're probably going to take the under
go.
There.
You go.
It sounded you started talking like you were going to have to take Sam around the back of the woodshed there.
Well, I just think that they've got five divisional games left, so I see five losses there, and then they only have what is it, nine games to get 6.5 wins. Is that a bit of Steiner maths, or was that correct?
No, I think that's
yeah, that's no.
Yeah, that
checks
was,
out just
that was,
about.
That was correct.
You take their 66 2/3 percent.
I think the Giants probably have the worst quarterback in the division. I think they probably have the worst defense in the division.
What? You think they have the worst quarterback in the division?
Yes, I do, because Sam Howell, well, we'll talk about later, but I saw more good throws from Sam Howell in that game than I have from Daniel Jones for I don't know, ever maybe. So I'm banging the under. I think this is a 6 or 7 win team, and I think there's going to be some turbulent times ahead.
All right. On then we go. Actually, we'll cover the 2-0 Dallas Cowboys, who beat the brakes off the Giants in week one. The max 10.5 wins was the preseason prediction for this Dallas Cowboys team. Have you seen anything to suggest that that won't be an over?
No, I think 10.5 is quite a high figure. I think the highest that we're going to talk about is 11.5 later on, but 10.5 is pretty high. But from what I've seen, I think the Cowboys are probably the Cowboys or the 49ers are quite clearly the class of the NFC. They're going to have some tough division scraps in there with the Eagles, and you know these NFC East battles do tend to be quite unpredictable, even if I do think the Cowboys are quite clearly a better team than the Giants. It wouldn't surprise me if they split the season series. But although based on the first showing, maybe it would surprise me. You maybe would have expected them to wallop the Jets a little bit harder than they did, but I think the Jets do have an outstanding defense, even though CeeDee Lamb absolutely walked Sauce Gardner up and down the field. You didn't see that much from him last year. I think they are the best team in the division, first or second best team in the conference. Primed to have a hilarious bottle job in the playoffs, but in the regular season, this to me is a 12 win team. I'm taking the over.
I'm joining in with that over.
Me too.
Yeah, they just seem like a very complete team at the moment. It just feels primed that they are going to still lose in the divisional round very easily.
Yeah, with fucking Brandon Cook snapping the ball to Brett Maher or something.
Yeah, the question for me is wide receiver depth. But as soon as, if they pick that, if they manage that with like a decent free agent acquisition or anything like that, then yeah, there's no chance they won't make that.
Yeah, their top three is Cooks, Gallup, and Lamb, which is quite nice if they're all healthy, but they haven't been so far. Tight end's not great. The Cowboys always seem to create these like clones, just like clone white tight ends. And this year it's Jake Ferguson, Luke Schoonmaker, and Peyton Hendershot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a factory down there. It's bizarre.
All right. Wait. Ed, did you say over or under?
Over.
Oh, we've all gone over there. Nice. Okay. Then it's myself with the 2-0 Washington Commanders, who pre-season had a lower predicted win total than the Chicago Bears, guys. That happened. They were predicted 6.5, and I am banging the over on this one, baby. They are 2-0 already. They may have only beaten the Cardinals, and in my opinion, a very bad Broncos team. But just hear me out here. The balls that they showed in that Broncos game, they were down by a fairly considerable margin at one point, and Russell Wilson was walking them all over the field with some lovely deep passes, and then all of a sudden, Sam Howell started waking up and started hitting these very nice throws to Terry McLaurin, hitting these nice throws to Marvin... Not to Marvin Mims, that was the Broncos.
Jahan Dotson.
Hitting these throws to Jahan Dotson. He had a nice completion down the right side to, I believe it was... Was it Logan Thomas or was it John Bates down the sideline? But anyway, it doesn't matter because they have...
Curtis Samuel's there.
They have plenty of depth. Brian Robinson had a very nice game. 87 yards, 18 carries, 2 touchdowns. They are capable of walking all over teams if they've got the opportunity. I know that they're going to be probably getting a 4 losses out of the division from the Eagles and the Cowboys because the Eagles and Cowboys are pretty good. But, you know, don't bank on them to not just take a little cheeky one there. They've got to play the Bears. They've got to play the Falcons on the road. They've got the Giants. They've got the Rams, which could potentially be quite injury-stricken at one point. Feels to me. They've got the Jets in a big spot. 6.5 feels a little low for my liking. I'm taking that over. I feel like this is a comfortable 8-win team.
Yeah, they're great, man. I expect them to win 8 games.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they get... To be fair, I mean, looking at their schedule, they do still have quite a few tough games, but, like, there's 8 wins in there, baby.
I know, it was just a funny, like, disconnect between the way we're talking about them and the finale of 8 wins.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with the over. I think, you know, all they need to do is win 4.5, which is to say 5 of the last 15 games. I think they're very capable of that. But aside from that, I think when I watched that Sam Howell pass to Terry McLaurin, the lights turned on for me. I was like, hang on, that is a little bit special. That is not the sort of thing that we're used to seeing from this Commanders team. And I think there's a good chance that Sam Howell, who was frisky in that one start last year, you know, I think he could already be the best quarterback that Terry McLaurin's ever played with, quite potentially. So, yeah, I'm definitely taking the over.
You'd be mad not to take the over. This team kind of reminds me, do you remember back in the day where Denver had their sort of like no-fly zone offense, where they would just... Any offensive Bailey? Player would come out of the game.
Chris Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah, Akeem Talib. Like these, and the, you'd come out of it and the offense just look beaten up. Like that's what the Washington defense is capable of doing to any team. Like they can be more physical than you.
God, imagine if Chase Young was a good player. They could really be onto something.
I will begrudgingly take the over.
It's going to be so bad when they go on a 12-game losing streak.
Yeah. All right. Ed, final team in the NFC East. We have the 2-0 Philadelphia Eagles. And their over-under prediction coming into this season was 11.5. Made it to the Super Bowl last year. Are you taking the over?
I'm cautious to take the over because while they've won 2 games, they don't seem like an NFL upper echelon team, do they? So you have to ask yourself, what's a step below the top teams in the NFL? Are they going to win 12 games? Like, is a team that isn't the Niners going to win more than 12 games in the NFC? Maybe. I think that I'm going to play the under on this one, but I'm going to do so with a big asterisk to say that I'd also be perfectly happy if they went over.
I wouldn't begrudge them hitting the over at all. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I'm hedging my bets on this one because this is the ultimate team upon which to hedge your bets. They could sort it all out and it could be great, or they could just fail to capture lightning in a bottle again like they did last year. You know, either way, I think that Jalen Hurts needs to play better than he has in those first two games.
Do you know what? I'm going to... Oh, no, you get them.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I actually agree with Ed. I am going to take the under because I think they're probably this year maybe going to regress a little bit. They have struggled to distribute the ball like they did last year. What's really concerning to me is their secondary depth behind Darius Slay. Josh Jobe, I think his name is, was getting absolutely cooked. I mean, I know the Vikings have, you know, some nice receivers, but he was getting cooked in that game. The only thing that's concerning to me that would make me hesitate to take the under is that the first game where they didn't look like world beaters was against the Patriots, and we just saw the Dolphins, spoiler alert, kind of struggle as well to pull away from the Patriots. I think they're just going to be that kind of team. So I think the Dolphins are a great team. I think the Eagles are going to be a good team, but second in the division, 10 wins. Don't have all day.
Sorry, Mags, we'd ran over the time. I'm sorry. Unless you want to make one of this team, potentially, one of those that we drag on a little bit, because I feel like this is quite an interesting one to talk about. This is a former Super Bowl contender as of last year. And I still think
they're a Super Bowl contender, to be clear.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that they're not going to be good, but I'm just saying, like, you are right in the sense that they struggled a little bit to pull away, and the Vikings' D-line and linebackers got ran all over by DeAndre Swift, and I know that that sort of got, like, everybody thinking, okay, like, the Eagles can still show that they can move the ball very efficiently and stuff, and, like, that is true, but... At what point do you reckon the Vikings should have realized that the Eagles were going to run the same play when they went like 7 plays and all of them were a read option handoff to DeAndre Swift to the right guard? Like, that feels more a telling thing on the Vikings D-line not adjusting than the Eagles being back. Like...
thing with the Eagles, though, you have to honor the fact that they can kill you in the passing game with the weapons they have, and they can win in different ways. And I took the under, but would it shock me? You know, just under based on these first two games, would it shock me if they put together 4 quarters of their best football and absolutely mollywop the next team they play? It would not shock me at all.
Well, who is the next team that they play?
I don't know. If the Eagles put together 4 quarters of their best football, they'll win.
Is it the Giants?
No, I believe it's the Bucs.
Okay, well, they will mollywop the Bucs, and they will probably mollywop the Giants, like, the week after.
Their schedule is pretty, like, I could very easily see them going 6-0, and they would still have 2 Giants games to play, the Cardinals to play, another Commanders game.
I'm just having a look here. It's at Bucks, home to Commanders, at Rams, at Jets, home to Dolphins, at Commanders, home to Cowboys, at Chiefs, home to Bills, home to 49ers. Actually, in fairness, now that I'm looking here, like, the two Cowboys games are going to be tough. They've got the Bills, if Josh Allen can keep that going. If the Chiefs can wake up by November, they've got the Niners. Like, I think I'm still comfortable with saying that they won't win 12 games, which is ultimately what this would have to be. Like, I'm still taking the under here. That is 5 already tough games, and that also doesn't include the potential that, like, a Commanders might do what they did last year and just shock them. Just, like, go in there and just beat the piss out of them for no reason.
Are you taking the over or the under, Sam?
I'm probably hitting the over. I think the offense is gonna pull together. I think Hurts' play is gonna improve. And I think they're gonna bust out a few, like, tough wins against, you know, a Cowboys or a 49ers. And
I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah. All right. NFC East done. we now move into, well, we move into
the lightning round.
Yeah, the NFC South, where we'll start with Max and the Atlanta Falcons, who are 2-0 currently. They're over under coming into the year, 8.5. Max, take it away. Are you taking the over or under?
I'm going to take the over on the Falcons because I liked what I saw against the Packers. I think they are going to be that kind of team. The Falcons, so for what it's worth, the Falcons and that Packers game, the Packers had 50 plays on offense. The Falcons had 82. And when you have that kind of play disparity and you've got the team with Tyler Allgeier, you've got the team with Bijan Robinson, your defense is simply going to buckle under that pressure. And that's exactly what happened to the Packers. I think the Falcons are going to be able to boa constrict their division mates, get quite a few wins out of that. But I don't... The thing that would stop me is that I still don't think Desmond Ridder is a good quarterback. He made some nice plays in this, you know, a nice couple throws to Matt Collins. Jonnu Smith, weirdly, had a couple. Drake London had a couple. But I do think they will probably win the division. As it stands, they would be my division pick. But then again, they might win the division and then their two games against the Saints lose on a balance of like 87 to 15. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But I'm taking the over.
I'm also hitting the over. I'm looking at their schedule and it is real weak, especially with the like the Jets game. I feel like preseason was one of the ones that they had marked as an L. I don't see that right now. I see the Falcons potentially winning up to... I could genuinely see 11 wins out of this schedule. This is mental.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to agree with that. I think when you look at the thing and you think, okay, they've probably realistically got 5 division wins here, then they're already on 7.
Yeah. I'm hitting the over. Like, it's stupid to say, I didn't think Bijan would make this much of an impact this quickly. It's been incredible. I love it.
All right.
Yeah, there's a fear over the word generational now, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean he might get hurt. Obviously he's a running back, but he was by far the biggest spark on the field in that game, so they need to build the whole ship out of Bijan Robinson.
Okay. Ed, you have the Carolina Panthers, who currently sit 0-1 heading into Monday Night Football against the Saints. Their preseason predictions was 7.5. Taking the over or under, Ed?
I'm going to take the under. I think when you look at the division, they might be the worst team in the division. And I think maybe the reason for that is, well, the two reasons really, a lack of sort of pass catchers, or like really sort of like defined pass catchers. Their only sort of bright spots after they lost DJ Moore or Terrace Marshall and an aged Adam Thielen. And you sort
he
of worry
not
where
a bright
Bryce
spot in week one.
No, he wasn't. He was absent. But, like, I mean, that's my point. They're only sort of notable names, I think. And then the other thing is poor O-line play. And if there's one thing, or if there's two things you need to help a rookie QB, it's established wide receivers and decent O-line play. So,
especially for Bryce Young.
I can't see them getting more than 6 wins. So, comfortably on the under.
Yeah, I especially with... the injury to what was the cornerback that ended up going down? It was
JC Horn.
Yeah, it just feels like the defense isn't strong enough right now. They're not playing well enough to overcome like any injuries at all. There's not really a very good next man up mentality going off, and yeah, poor O-line play. They have a weak schedule, but it doesn't matter. They aren't good.
Yeah, this team's going to be like 2-4 at the trade deadline and end up shipping Brian Burns for a shed load of first overalls, probably. And they're going to need it because, like I said, the skill position talent is really bad. You can't just keep running it to LaVisca Chenault. That's not gonna get you to 7.5. Under.
Sam, over, yeah. Under.
Under.
All right.
That was the sound of a man with food in his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not even eating. That's just what I have a big tongue.
He's got a mouthful of tongue.
All right, Sam, you have the New Orleans Saints, who are 1-0 heading into Monday Night Football. Over under 9.5, Sam.
So 9.5 seems very steep for the Saints, but like obviously it's a weak division, and you know you can pencil them in absolute bare minimum for 4 or 5 wins within the conference, or not conference, division. They've got some difficult games, but their most troubling opponents are like the Lions and like the Jags and the Vikings. Like, it's not a... I can absolutely see them, like, pushing out 10 wins. Like, Derek Carr is not going to have to be a world beater. The defense isn't really going to have to be a world beater. They're just incredibly lucky to be in an absolute dogshit division. So, when I first saw 9.5, I was, like... It was a visceral reaction, but actually looking through it, I'm hitting the over.
You're hitting the over?
I'm hitting the over.
My beef with the Saints is well documented, but I can't conscionably see. I tell you what, the biggest factor for me, the biggest X factor for me, is for the Saints is Dennis Allen. Like, has Dennis Allen really proved that he's an NFL head coach yet? Like, what's their signature win? What's their, you know, what does he bring to the table?
I get it, but let me just quickly run down their schedule. So they've got Panthers, like, tonight, and they've got Packers, Bucks, Patriots, Texans, Jags, Colts, Bears, Vikings, Falcons, Lions, Panthers, Giants, Rams, Bucks, Falcons. Like... A lot of those, you know, they're probably going to be scrappy, but they could absolutely go 10-7.
Yeah, I'm taking the over on the Saints. Despite what I said earlier about the Falcons, I gave it some thought and realized that actually the Saints, Derek Carr, Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, yeah, and
Michael Thomas looked great last week.
A better defense than the Falcons have. I actually almost regret now taking the over on the Falcons. I'm taking the over on the Saints.
I'm also taking the over on the Saints. The scoreline against the Titans really doesn't reflect like how wide that game was in terms of margins. Like it felt like the Saints stifled the Titans constantly, and it just felt like maybe in another light they put up 40 points on that Titans team. Like they. It just felt like everything was really clicking for them. Olave, Shaheed, Thomas as well. Like, yeah, it just that feels like a better team than 9.5 wins with that schedule as well. Come on now. Okay, on we go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who preseason 6-5. They are currently 2-0, which is a little surprising by my book. But I, for that reason alone, I'm gonna take the over because they still have a division game against everybody in the division, obviously, left to play, and like it wouldn't surprise me if they swept the Panthers. They've got to play the Texans. If Anthony Richardson misses any time, and like they play the Colts in a bad light, they could. Do this again. It feels like, by the way, Mike Evans is only good when he has a useless quarterback. Baker Mayfield is one of the worst passers in the NFL statistically, but Mike Evans suddenly popped off for 171 yards and a touchdown. His whole time with Tom Brady, he felt like he was like key for regression. Oh, are they almost slightly ruining paying him and stuff? No, he's just... He's just only good with bad quarterbacks. Johnny Manziel, Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Baker Mayfield is now showing it. Like, Mike Evans just weirdly seems to be, like, ultra reliable and can make all of those guys look a lot better than they are. And he's absolutely popping off. It would not surprise me if the Buccaneers end up winning like 7 or 8 games. I know that I don't like their team overall, but like, they're already 2-0. It's only 6.5. I'm taking the over.
I demand that you recant that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a bad QB.
I will not. I simply will not.
I'm taking the over.
Yeah, me too.
Under for me. This is the Baker Mayfield honeymoon period.
It's a honeymoon period, but I still feel like their defense, and like, if Mike Evans is going to continue to make him look a hell of a lot better than he actually is, like, so be it. They could easily win 4-5 more games. Sorry, 5 more games this whole season. They're already most of the way there.
Win a third of your games and you've got... got 7 wins, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy.
They had 8 last year with Tom Brady.
Yeah, and Tom Brady was absolutely cooked, brother. He was. It was bad. All right, moving on to the NFC West. We've put this in sort of bad order, and we're starting with the maybe worst... Oh, no, not the worst team in this division. Never mind. Max, you've got the LA Rams at 1-1. They're over-under coming in here. 6.5 wins. This is a little tricky.
I don't think it is. I'm banging the over because I think Matt Stafford to this team alone is worth probably 7 or 8 wins. I'm really concerned about the Cooper Kupp situation. Really worried about that. You know, it's not good when there's like unclear timescales. You have to see a specialist in, you know, Minnesota. That's not good, but Puka Nacua has just been uncoverable, and they've been able to move the ball up and down quite nicely. I think they are got a bit of a different identity with Kyron Williams. I mean, the news came out today they're seeking trade partners for Cam Akers. Good luck with that, but he won't be on the team. And I think this is a Rams team that is going to upset a few people. Probably maybe a borderline playoff team in this NFC. I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. What I don't know if I just managed to, like, with all the time that he spent out and, like, time that he had in where he was still dealing with injuries, I don't know whether I convinced myself that, like, Matt Stafford wasn't as good as I thought he was. But
that's the premier tight window passer in the NFL you're talking about.
He's been fantastic. And obviously Puka Nacua, a revelation if I can get cut back. But yeah, I'm on the over.
No, I think you're all mad. I think the wheels will fall off by about week 7.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going the
week
under.
Week 7, they might have 4 wins by then. They need 3.
Can't win anything without wheels.
True.
You know who they're playing week 7?
No.
Steelers.
Oh.
Which is...
I'm taking
the play the Cowboys after that, which is probably going to be a...
Yeah, I'm taking the
over. Wait. We're almost halfway through this now. We need to agree to a moratorium to keep the follow-up. We will have to agree to keep the follow-up analysis to a minimum in the second half here.
Yeah, we will.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. It is me with the San Francisco 49ers. It is 10.5 wins coming in here. They are 2-0. They are already looking like probably the best team in the whole conference by my book. I don't even really need to do very much more analysis. They are comfortably over for me. This is a 13, potential 14 win team. I don't see a weakness based off of how they've played like these 2 games.
Yeah, I'm saying over, even though I think that there's a good chance McCaffrey gets hurt and then they fall apart, but over for me.
Yeah. Over for me as well. But yeah, I was similar to Max. Like, you can't discount the Shanahan curse.
I also over can't wait for Sam Darnold's Super Bowl MVP.
All right. Well, that took us a minute, so
good quite job the out. Over from Sam there.
Yeah, good. Ed, you have the 1-1 Seattle Seahawks. Over under before the season was 8.5. What are you thinking now?
Look, they could go through the season winning and losing, alternating the game, and I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid at this Seahawks team. But on that, they'd get exactly 8.5 wins. So I'm going to go with the over.
Okay.
No further analysis.
I think that if the Seahawks O-line gets banged up, I think that this is a worse team than 8.5. I think I'm going to take the under. Purely based off of a hypothetical. But it's already sort of trending that way, and I'm not going to elaborate any further.
Yeah, I don't trust them to stay healthy enough to protect Geno, so I'm on the under.
Yep, I'm going for the under as well. This is a one-man team, and that one man is Ty Lockett. I think if he goes down, it's not good.
Okay, Sam, to finish off the whole NFC, we have the Arizona Cardinals at 0-2. They came in here with the lowest over-under in the entire league at 4.5. Are you taking the over, or do you think that this team fucking stinks?
So I would probably... I have to think that that half in the Giants gave him from Josh Dobbs was an aberration, and the defense completely shit the bed in the second half. So I am probably I'm banging the under. I think they'll get 4. But
I'm joining you in the under, and it's purely because I've just looked at the schedule, and it is Cowboys, Niners, Bengals, Rams, Seahawks, Ravens, Redacted, Falcons, Texans. Okay, but Rams, Steelers, Niners, Bears, Eagles, Seahawks.
Man, I think there's going to be something on the line in that Bears-Cardinals game.
Yeah.
I think there might be. No, the Bears are a better team than the Cardinals. They just blew a 24-3 lead to a team at home, to a team who got waxed 40-0 the week before.
Yeah.
Yikes. That is 2-15 shit under.
I was about to say 1-16 under.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, that's quite a nice little spicy one there. We don't think that they'll go winless, but... They are bad.
No, I think they'll have enough.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard to go winless.
Most of the worst teams in NFL history haven't got winless, to be fair.
That is true. All right, into the AFC we tread. And we start with the 2-0 Miami Dolphins, who just got a big win on Sunday Night Football at Gillette Stadium. They are coming in here with a 9.5 preseason win total. Now, I know that I've banged the under for the Seahawks purely based off of, like, are they going to stay healthy? I'm taking the over on the assumption that now that Tua has learned how to roll and doesn't slam his head off of the floor every time that he gets tackled, I think that they stay healthy enough and they are frisky enough to push. Like a 12-win team. This team has been marching the ball up and down the field. I know that, like, they were a little bit more stodgy against the Patriots, but they still didn't really struggle, I felt. Like, Tyreek Hill is dinking and dunking where he needs to be. Tua's playing great. This team feels great.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the over. I think they'll do a lot of damage here in the first couple months of the season. Come back to me when they're playing in Foxborough or Orchard Park, Meadowlands in December, because I think this team's a little bit soft in its core.
Well, they're not going to be playing at Foxborough in December because they've just played them here in September.
You never know, man. You never know. What I'm saying is I think this team is soft. I think they're a bunch of little Miami Beach boys. But when they're in their ideal conditions, which is to say on the beach, they've had everything they want. I'm taking the over, but I do think they're going to have a bit of a sad ending.
Yeah, I'm going with the over. I don't think. I don't. To be frank with you, I don't think there's a better team in football right now.
Oh, another spicy one. Sam, over or under?
Over. I love the short motion stuff, and like it's just, you know, Shanahan. But what if everything relied entirely on speed and nothing but? And I endorse it.
Sam endorses speed, everyone. You heard it here first. Anyway.
McDaniel's glad he doesn't coach a sport in this country, because I think that disposable vapes ban is really going to hit him hard. But luckily, Yanks will get away with it.
But, they don't play in London, do they? They play in Frankfurt, don't they, this year? One and one, Buffalo Bills, Sam. They came in with a 10.5 predicted win over under. Now, what are you saying?
So the disparity between like peak, or not even peak Josh Allen, but the good Josh Allen in this Raiders game, and the absolute like boneheaded, mind numbing, like awful Josh Allen from the Jets game, they could not be further apart, and this team will forever live and die by how he plays and the decisions that he makes. So I find it hard to judge exactly how any of these are gonna go. Like the defense, I think, has a chance to be very special, and I think that will put away a lot of kind of lesser teams on their schedule. Admittedly, there aren't many, but I like watching this team, and I think some of the two tight end stuff is cool, so I'm going to bang the over in a wish casting kind of way.
Dude loves 21 personnel, he loves the short motion, and he loves speed.
I'm kind of inclined to take the under at 10.5.
I'm going to take the over, because I think what happened in week one is literally just something that is going to keep happening when Josh Allen plays Robert Saleh's defense. He only has one speed. He's not smart enough to know how to adjust his game plan, but his normal game plan is good enough to beat, I would say, 10, 11 teams is fine.
Yeah, I'm going to say the over, but I'm slightly worried that Diggs is past it now, or at least getting that way. So that's a narrative that I'll be watching in this year.
By watching, do you mean proliferating of your own volition?
No, I do mean watching, because I want Diggs to be very good for a very long time.
All right.
Don't know about that, but
this might be the quickest one of all, guys.
Yes.
The only question. So the 1-1 Jets. Their over under is 9.5. So under, clearly. My only question is, what possible level of delusion are they on that they think they don't need to bring in competition for Zach Wilson? Don't understand. Are they being held at hostage? Whatever. Under.
Yeah. Under.
Under.
Yeah. Just get on.
Come on, man.
This is it's still annoying. They have such a good team outside of the quarterback right now, and yeah.
Give your head a bobble.
Just get out of here.
This next one, the Patriots 7-5. Sorry, Tom, to dive right in without letting you do your preamble. This one is the one that gave me the most head scratching, because they've got 15 games left, and if they go exactly right down the middle, and that's 7.5. And, like, I don't know. I still don't know what the Patriots are. Does anyone know what the Patriots are? I have no idea. Like, if it's possible to give this, like, a J or, like, a treble clef of just pure, like, misunderstanding, then that's what I'd give it. Over.
Agreed. I think over. But, like, they are such a weird team. You're absolutely right.
I want to say over, but because I've said over for the Dolphins and the Bills, logically I don't know if the 0-2 Patriots can also be over. So I'm gonna say under, but again, seven wins sounds about right. Mac Jones has looked much better than he did last year already, but like you say, this team is a man without a country. They've got no identity.
Yeah, I'm saying under, not by a terrible amount, but I can't see it.
This spreadsheet has already become like really illegible, by the way. Like, just looking at it, it's just a bunch of alright, the currently 0-1, still yet to play against the Redacted on Monday night, Pittsburgh Steelers. They came in 8.5. I fully see why. They got the brakes beaten off them by the 49ers in week one, but like I maintain that the Niners are the best team in the whole NFL, and like it just feels like that was just such a like it, you could play that game in a complete vacuum, and I don't think that comes out in the exact same like really ugly way. It was just like the whole team just like completely forgot what they were doing. TJ Watt had like a great day, but everybody else just like really struggled. The concerning thing is that despite like a much easier schedule than like obviously playing the 49ers every week, they are now going to be missing Cam Hayward for a bit, which means that they're going to have to rely on like Keanu Benton to step up. I still don't know exactly whether or not this team is just sort of like fooling me. I'm going to take the over because I still feel like with the schedule this like up and down, like they still have some proper honking teams to play as well. Like it's a Mike Tomlin team. Like they're going to win 9 games even when they're bad. Like this is just what happens. Yeah. Easy over for me, but I feel less good about them than I did coming into week one, that's for sure.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like we might have the same Steelers team that we have every year. You know, on our hands here. Do you know what I mean? Like a classic 9-8. It's going to look really bad until you start getting some of those players back from injury. Then you'll pick it up a little bit in the second half. I do worry about the offense. I really do worry about the offense with given the play calling, given the injuries. I'm going to take the over. Just about. I think the coaching really. Another coach I'm taking the under on this team, but over for me.
Yeah, I'm entirely concurrent with that. I think if yeah, everything's been said. Over.
Yeah, I'm going over too. I don't see. I mean, I probably felt basically the same, if not. The Niners game was no good. I probably felt the same, if not worse, last year. And, you know, then they just kind of did what they always do. So, yeah, I'm going over.
I just feel like, I don't want to, like, eat too much time here, but it just feels like there are so many things that, like, happened in week one around the league that, like, after watching, like, Joe Burrow and, like, half of the other offenses in the league also just like collectively really shit the bed against far worse teams. Suddenly I felt like way less worse about the Steelers week
You're
one.
You're going to find out a thing or two tonight and next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, week one, a wash. We move on to the 0-2 for the second year running, actually. Cincinnati Bengals, Sam. 11-5 coming into the year. They've looked shakier than last year, and they're 0-2. But do you have faith, Sam?
No, I do not. I don't know what the status is with Burrow's calf thing. I don't know how much of an issue that will be. But they've looked completely—they've looked toothless, and the. I mean, not a great deal has changed kind of personnel-wise. There's not been, like, huge swathes of, like, moves. But watching the the Ravens just absolutely run it down their throats. Kind of, I don't know. I know we were in the same position last year, but this team is not reaching 12 wins in my mind. So I'm going the under.
Yeah, I'm only picking the under because of the 11.5. If it was,
yeah. I think this is the highest in the league.
I think if it was 9.5, which it was never going to be, like I'd be banging the over every day because this is still like a 10 or 11, but 12 is just too high. I'm going to take the under, but I'm sorry, Bengals fans.
Yeah, under for me. I think when Chase and Higgins and Burrow aren't really performing to their maximum potential, you start looking around this roster and thinking like, oh, hang on, actually, we've got a bit of a problem here. Yeah, I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the over. I like Cincy. I want them to do well.
You think Cincy 12-3? That's bold. It's bold.
It's fair.
Yeah, I do. I'm. Look, if any team has the firepower to win 12 games this year, it's probably the Bengals. I mean,
all right. The 2-0 Baltimore Ravens, who got the big win against the Bengals. In week 2, they were predicted at 10-5. Ed, are you taking the over or under?
I feel like as a consequence of my last pick, I probably have to take the under here. But I think that this Baltimore Ravens squad is consistently the best constructed squad, and therefore consistently the one that is sort of karmically snake bit the most. And I just can't see that changing this year. So yeah. It's under for me.
Best constructed squad. I know they took Carl Hamilton.
What I mean by that is they continue to home grow the best players.
Yeah, I have to say, given what we talked about in week 1, where they had these devastating injuries, to come out and, like you said, run it at Cincy like that, was really encouraging. And I think the Ravens with DeMar in, they just win these games. Like, it's kind of unheralded. They're one of the winningest teams in the league with DeMar in the center. So I'm taking the over.
I'm also sort of inclined to take the over. Like, it feels like they are also an 11 win team. So for that, I've got to take it.
Banging the over on 10.5 is one of those where you're like, after you say it, you're like,
oh! Yeah. Any injuries and you're just like, oh God, no.
Still got to win 9 more games to get that.
When you put it like that, I think it's
easy. Trying to win 12 out of 15.
Yeah, I could see the Bengals winning 15 out of 15.
Bloody hell! Let's move on from that swiftly.
I'm also going over, assuming that some of these injuries can, you know, get back on the field, but.
God, it's like watching a small wooden creature cross the road, isn't it? Bated breath.
Alright, on we go with the 11, well, sorry, the 1-1 Chiefs coming in with 11.5 as well, over and under. Max, I know you're a little down.
Tough,
here,
isn't it?
Oh, isn't
this
it rough?
Tough. 11.5 is really high. And they have not looked good. They've scored, 20 in the first game? Was it 17 against the Jags? It's not. They haven't looked like the Chiefs, have they? But at the same time, I do have the belief that their offensive line is going to gel as the year goes on. Jawan Taylor is probably going to get flagged 4 or 5 times every game. With their receivers really troubling, Pacheco will improve as the line improves. But this. The Chiefs do this every year, though. The Patriots, remember? They just start every year. And you'd be like, oh, hang on. Well, there's some problems here. There's some holes in the roster. And the year they're a juggernaut. But 11.5 is really high. I'm just going to have to like close my eyes and flip a coin on this one. In the AFC,
how will you see the result?
I'm going to say under. I think 10 or 11. But they'll come in really hot. 10 seems low, but 12 seems high. So I'm going to say under. Tricky, man. It's tricky.
I'm going to say over for the exact same reasons of, like, I've been fooled a billion times already with the Patriots, and I'm prepared to just let whatever the fuck happen
They just need to like catch fire and they'll go.
Yeah, they'll take off to a ridiculous level.
Oh, man, MVS, Skymore, Tony, God.
Yeah, I'm going the under for that exact reason. But can I go for the under with an asterisk that if they trade for a great wide receiver, then it'll be over?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things that could happen.
Yeah, same reservations, but I'm going under. I imagine they will be made to look a fool, as I so often am, but...
All right. Ed, you have the 0-2 LA Chargers. They came in 9.5 as their over-under. That's... this is tough as well. This feels tricky, out. But then also not. Oh, what a dumpster fire.
It has to be under. I mean, obviously we see it going over, but all we can do when we look at the Chargers is look at the past, and what does the past tell us? Under.
The past tells us have no faith in the Chargers.
Yes, precisely.
Ye of little faith that has never been shown to you in the first place.
I'm taking the over.
After you were the one with the most vociferous criticism of them earlier, you're now taking the over.
Yeah, like because they don't win these games in big spots, but they'll rack up the wins because they're a good team. They just never quite make the leap, do they? But I think they'll be a playoff team. So I think they'll have at least 9 wins, and I'm willing to bet they'll have 10. And then they'll kill me, and I'll be fuming.
I'm going under. I will refuse to believe in this team.
I'm going over. I think this is a 10-win team. I still maintain it. They will get it right eventually. It'll be like week 4, but they'll get it right more than any other time. Right. 0-2 Denver Broncos, Sam, coming in with an 8.5 over under. That feels really high if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I was thinking it's weird.
Like
it feels
incredible. How many games did they win last year?
I don't know, but Sam, take it away.
So 8.5 does in fact sound really high. Parts of the Commanders game were like great. Like I think it was just the first 3 drives were like touchdowns, and it, or maybe not the first few drives, but like 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, it was great. But they just stall, so like it comes to such a juddering halt so quickly. And there was enough here that I think that the offense could probably improve. But O-line and that kind of rebuild doesn't seem like that's going well. So maybe Wilson isn't going to be kept kind of safe enough to be, you know, passable for the most part. I'm going the under.
I've just thought of a really funny scenario that I think is looking increasingly more likely.
Yes.
And I'm going to sort of use the Broncos here to take like longer time. The Russell Wilson, Sean Payton relationship will not evolve into anything more than Sean Payton wanting to get rid of him quickly. The Jets are hungry for a quarterback.
Oh, okay.
A Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson reunion by week 8 is so unbelievably on the cards. And this Broncos,
you said by week 8 because that's what our bet was last.
Yes, it was. It's a trade deadline move, and I'm taking the under, baby. This Broncos team isn't winning more than 5 games.
Be careful though. It's spicy.
Taking the under as well, because 8.5 is weirdly high, but I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think there were tangible signs of improvement, but I do think there's going to be a narrative of, hang on, why do we all think the Broncos had such great receivers? When you look at it, actually they don't. Marvin Mims had like 100 yards on 2 catches, but do you know how many routes he ran in that game? 5. That's not sustainable. Under.
Yeah, under.
and I'm not going to show my working.
Look into your heart, you know it to be true.
All right. I have the 1-1 Las Vegas Raiders, who came into the year 6-5. 6.5 over under. It's a long show, this one. The Raiders feel like a bad team, and when Jimmy Garoppolo goes down, they're going to be turning the keys over to Aiden O'Connell, is it?
The former Purdue Boilermaker.
Yes, and I know that there is one an analyst who has big faith in Aiden O'Connell, but I don't, baby. I think that this is a bad team with bad coaching and bad players that don't know how to play disciplined football. I genuinely think that this is a... I think this is 6 wins, so I'm taking the under. But, like, it's still a low mark anyway, and I'm still taking the under on it.
Yeah, 5 or 6 for me. I'm taking the under. Not a good team.
I'll take the under, but I'd like to, if we can just, like, just let's all stop for a moment and think about how nice the NFL would be if the Raiders just had a few seasons off. Like, you know, just come back in a few years, but for now, let's the Raiders are on hiatus. That'd just be so nice.
Yeah, like when they rebooted Assassin's Creed.
Can't wait for them to come back more complicated than ever.
Sam, are you taking the over or under?
I'm taking the under. This is a dumb team.
I like, by the way, that the whole AFC West, Ed and Sam took everyone under their win total. Somebody has to be better than...
Yeah, the Chargers as well.
Yeah, same. I've got the Chargers and Chiefs.
Going to be 0.5 of a win under their win total.
So this is going to be an 11-9-8-6 win division. Got it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
When you put it like that.
Last division. Come on, let's get to the dregs.
We move on then to the AFC South, the final division that we've got to cover. We probably should have just done this like AFC one episode, NFC another, but who gives a fuck? The 1-1 Jacksonville Jaguars, 9.5 coming into the year. I do not know is what my answer is. This is a team that I feel like is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the whole division. And yet, when they played against the Chiefs and the Chiefs like weren't very good defensively, it felt like, and they could not move the ball, they still put 9 points up on the Chiefs. The Jags, I don't understand what they are right now, and I kind of just see it being another, like, in the same way that we've gone the half a game under for everyone in the West, I'm kind of going to do that for me in the South. I'm taking the under with the Jags.
Yeah, I think 9 wins. I think they don't have to be that good to get to 10 in this division, but 9 sounds about right. I wasn't impressed by them. You know, I've not bought into the hype. I'm taking the under. I think it's going to be a tragic division race.
More Ed guys per capita than any other team, so I'm going to take the over.
If the play calling improves, then I'm hitting the over. But some of it is incredibly frustrating.
Was that an over or under? I couldn't tell.
If play calling improves, over. So on.
Do you think it will?
Yeah. What does this mean?
I will say yes. Over.
Okay.
I think if they win 8 or 9 more games, they'll probably get the. Okay. Colts. Sorry. 1-1. 6.5. I'm actually going to hit the over because I really have enjoyed watching them the first 2 weeks. They were showed some real guts in that first game against the Jags. The defense is a bit of a mess,
They manhandled the Texans. I think this is a 7-win squad. If Anthony Richardson stays healthy, and I don't want to try and second guess the fact that he won't. He's probably been the most impressive rookie quarterback to me so far, and he's gone off hurt both times. So I'm taking the over on the Colts.
I'm also taking the over. Like, again, like 7 or 8 feels about right if Anthony Richardson stays like on the field, because he is so dynamic. He has been the best one of the lot of these like rookie quarterbacks from the first round. Like, it's just keep him upright for the love of God.
He's gonna have to basically be, you know, he's basically gonna have to be like Cam Newton, put the team on his back. But I kind of think he could potentially.
He could.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going over. I'd love it.
I'm gonna say under, and I think it's not because I agree, I think Richardson's been an exciting prospect, but I kind of look at the Shane Steichen experience already and see a few cracks. Like, I think that this could be a very unhappy marriage.
Interesting. Sam, you've got the Tennessee Titans, who are 1-1. 7.5 is their prediction coming in. Over or under, baby?
I can... This last game gave me faith that Ryan Tannehill can still run an offense fairly competently. It's a weak division. I'm going over, especially if they can like shoot a few more balls downfield. You know, give Traylon Burks a little love. That defensive line, fuck me.
Yeah, I'm banging the over on the Titans. I like what I saw. I think 8 or 9 is very, very plausible here. I want to see more of Ty J Spears.
I'm not fussed about seeing more from Ty J Spears, but I'd like to see more out of Harold Landry, so I'm also going to say above.
I'm going to be stubborn and still think that the Titans are really not good and will be under. That's what I'm banging. I'm banging the under.
Fair enough.
I think that, yeah. Last team then, in that case, Ed, you have the honours with the 0-2 Houston Texans. What a way to finish. 6.5 is the predicted. Give us something.
I think that there's a key path to success for this team, and I don't think they're the worst team in the NFL, or even actually, I don't even think they're a bottom 4 or 5 team in the NFL, but I don't see them reaching 7 wins, so I'm going under.
Yeah, under for me. CJ Stroud is fighting for his life every single play that I've watched of him, and like he's playing fairly well with that, but he just has absolutely no help. They have no line, no defense, no wide receivers. They fucking stink. Under.
Yep, under. He's like he was throwing the ball quite well against the Colts, or at least better than the score had me believe, but I don't think he's good enough to kind of outrun his situation. So, under.
Yeah, under for me. I do think CJ Stroud is going to be a really good quarterback, but I don't think his team's ready to compete yet.
Alright, good job everyone. We did it.
Finally did it.
Yeah, we've made it through the
fall. Wait, did Ed take the over on the Texans?
Yes.
No.
Wait, I thought
No, I didn't. I took the under.
Oh, my bad. That's fine.
So I'm a spreadsheet with like, no way.
Yeah,
I'm a blue sky thinker, but I can't conscientiously pick the Texans above 7 wins.
No. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Like I say, we probably should have split this out over 2 episodes, but, you know, what are you going to do, eh? I'm sure that you've probably got plenty of disagreements. Let us know how you feel your team is going to do from this point, and we'll try and get back to you, I guess. Well, see you next time around.
Bye.
Jazz.